Now, all being well, Peter, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, yeah.
Ah, a miracle, a miracle. Now, I'm not really quite sure how to introduce today's guest, Peter Curtis, because he's a dancer, potter, and now a writer. But first off, welcome to Phoenix FM, Peter.
Thank you very much, Scott. Nice to be on your programme.
Anyway, as we have to start somewhere, perhaps we better start with the dancing, which is where it all began, at the very early age of 7. Now, ballet is not something one might associate as being something a 7-year-old boy would aspire to. So why did you want to do it?
You're quite right, Scott. And at the time, for many years, I was the only boy that was doing ballet.
There's a surprise.
The reason I wanted to do it was because I was jealous of my sister. She went to ballet classes. I didn't know what they were, but I was madly jealous of the fact that all this attention was paid to her. And I begged my mum and dad to let me go. And for quite some while, they were not keen on the idea at all, but I eventually wore them down. And my mum took me to the first class, which I absolutely hated, and I remember standing in the corner crying and saying I wasn't doing that sissy stuff. But my mum was a bit of a character, and literally she got hold of me by the scruff of the neck the following week, and she said, "You little horror, you wanted to go, now you're damn well going." And she dragged me off to the next class, and ironically I quite enjoyed that class. So yeah. Then she was committed to taking me to the following class, and then it went on and on and on.
Well, jealousy apart of your sister, were you any good at it?
I became good at it, yes. Uh-huh. And in fact, I won a scholarship to the Royal Academy of Dancing when I was 10 or 11. I can't remember quite exactly what the age was.
It's just showing off.
So, yes, I did get quite good at it. And eventually, in fact, joined a ballet company and became principal dancer. So.
And that was Ballet Rambert, wasn't it?
That was Ballet Rambert, yes, absolutely.
Yes. Now, and you became, as you say, one of their principal dancers. Well, I'm proud to ask how your sister progressed during this time. Did she?
Well, unfortunately, my sister Jacqueline had a really nasty accident on a cycle. She was knocked off her cycle by a motorcyclist, and she was really severely concussed.
Oh dear.
And she actually had progressed from ballet class to tap class, and from a tap class to an acrobatics class, or I think it's probably what you would call rhythmic gymnastics these days.
But she seems to have survived well.
Sorry?
So she's doing well even now, is she?
Yeah, she actually became a hairdresser, so she still kind of had a hand in kind of an art and craft type industry. So she became a hairdresser at a very famous salon in central London.
Wow. Yeah. Oh. Obviously a very talented family.
I don't know about that. But
so how long were you with Ballet Rambert, and how did things change over time?
I was with them for 11 years, from 1961 to 1972. Mm-hmm. I trained at the Rambert School, but that was going back to the RAD. That was after I got kicked out of the RAD, and there's a...
The RAD? What's that?
Royal Academy of Dancing.
Oh, right, yep.
There's an amusing story in my book about how it was that I managed to get kicked out.
Well, you'd have to tell us now.
Sorry?
You'll have to tell us now.
Oh, well, basically, it was typical kind of boy. We were a group of boys they'd ever had.
Yeah.
They'd had groups of girls, and the girls, frankly, you know, were so subservient that it wasn't true. We weren't. We were little monsters.
Typical boys, yes.
So I used to turn up caked in mud most weeks because I had football just before the ballet class.
Oh dear,
we let them a bit of a merry dance, really, and
a merry dance. Well, I suppose you would.
Yeah. But in the letter when they kicked me out, it said that I would never make a ballet dancer.
Yeah.
And that actually was my inspiration for becoming a ballet dancer, because until that point, I really just wanted to be in the theatre as an entertainer. So
it changed over time at Ballet Rambert, did it not?
That's right. In 1966, there were a lot of ballet companies in the country, and it was getting increasingly difficult to compete with companies that got massive grants. We got small grants, but There are other companies like the Royal Ballet Company that got massive grants and could put on very extravagant productions.
Yeah.
We were, I think, a very artistic company in terms of dance skill, etc., but productions weren't as fabulous. So in 1966, there was a decision to pursue a contemporary dance route.
How did you feel about that?
So that's what happened. It became, instead of being Ballet Rombert Company, it became a Rombert Dance Company.
And did that change your feelings about the whole company?
It did, but for the better. Uh-huh. At the time that it changed, I had a run-in with the Royal Ballet Director.
Another
run-in, yeah. I was a bit of a naughty boy, really. And so I wasn't entirely sure that I wanted to change into a contemporary dancer, but I did eventually change, and I absolutely loved it. The new company very much reflected the change in society. It was much more liberated repertoire of works, very contemporary, and it was absolutely amazing. I mean, I had a fabulous career, because the first 5.5 years it was as a classical dancer, and the second 5.5 years was a contemporary dancer doing the most amazing works. I mean, you know, it was extraordinary, so I was very, very lucky.
Now, after that, you went on to become a lecturer at Dartington College, Devon, in both dance and health, and also a teacher, and later in Laban College in South East London.
Yeah.
Dance teacher I get, but how on earth do you lecture on dance?
Well, dance training after I trained changed very significantly. In the early days when I trained, basically, it was by copying movement, and there was no theoretical training at all. Now, training is both practical and theoretical, right up to doctorate level. So for anybody kind of training in dance now, there are still places where you can train purely in the practical method, but most of the training is a combination of both. So if you're training as a dancer now, you have to study dance history, aesthetics, movement analysis, notation. I mean, that's just to name a few academic subjects. It's a very tough training. And training is more often than not in colleges or universities, which is where one acquires the title of lecturer.
Right, okay.
So I always describe myself as dance teacher / lecturer, because it's a bit dubious. I have lectured, in terms of verbalization, but most of my work was actually practical based and teaching ballet classes, contemporary dance classes, repertory classes, etc. So...
Now, this is where things come completely off the rails, because from dance you suddenly uncover a talent for pottery. How on earth did that happen?
Well, that was due to my time at Dartington College. Uh-huh. We were very much into the arts and crafts, and I fell in love with pottery. It was one of the few times in my life that I had a chance to do evening classes, and I did some evening classes with a local potter. And then a couple of years later... after I'd been at Laban for a year, but couldn't sustain being there any longer because I was commuting backwards and forwards to London.
Yeah.
I told my colleagues at Laban that I was going to become a potter, which was some mad idea. I don't know where it came from. And when I got back to Devon, I was reading the local paper and reading the adverts. Two things which I've never done in my life, fundamentally. And somebody was selling a kiln.
Yeah.
And when I rang to ask about the kiln, he started talking about the pyrometer and the thermocouple, and I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. Not a clue.
Not surprised.
And so I phoned the potter that I had the classes with.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I'm retiring, so why don't you buy all my equipment? My kiln doesn't have any problem with the thermocouple or the pyrometer. So I bought the whole lot from him.
Yeah.
Which was brilliant, because I think if I just bought a kiln, you know, I may never have bought a wheel, etc.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And I set up on my garage and sat there with a book, How to Make a Pot.
Clever stuff, yeah.
Sorry?
Clever stuff.
Well,
read, if all else fails, read the instructions, eh?
Absolutely. But I had a craft shop at the time, and so I had a ready outlet. By the end of the winter, I could make a reasonable pot. I mean, when I look back now, I think they're absolutely ghastly, some of those first pots I made. They're pretty good now, but then, wow.
Well, they're probably collector's items now.
I think they probably are. But I soon was kind of making more than would sell in the shop, and then an agent who used to sell the stuff for the shop asked if I would like her to start selling pots in other places. So I said, yeah, try it. And so she was very successful. And then eventually I did a trade fair.
Yeah.
And at the trade fair, the orders were so successful, it was ridiculous. It took me a year to make them, because as fast as I sent orders out, they wanted a refill. So, it was a nightmare in a way. But that was what got me started with a business rather than a hobby.
Yeah, because the pottery is now a big business for you, isn't it, not?
It isn't any longer, Scott, no.
Oh.
I actually closed my business 20 years ago.
Oh!
The reason why was because I was selling to about 350 shops worldwide.
Right.
Which sounds absolutely ridiculous. And I had to employ 7 potters.
Yeah.
And I did really big trade fairs. I did Birmingham International trade fairs in the spring and the autumn. I did Top Draw. I had really huge trade fairs. Megalomania in me.
Yeah.
Eventually got to a point where every trade fair I did, people wanted new designs. Well, I couldn't keep producing new designs like that. So eventually I closed it down. I gave my staff a year to find new employment.
Mm.
And now I just sell at craft fairs, including some Essex fairs. One that I've been doing for quite a few years is the RHS Hyde Hall craft fair in the spring and the autumn. I've got a website. People would like to see my pots. It's www.milbrookpottery.co.uk.
Milbrook Copper Pottery.
Milbrook.
Milbrook. Milbrook Pottery.
Yes, I got...
Because I got it down as Winchcombe, so I'm obviously wrong.
I know. Winchcombe,
that was the old one, wasn't it?
My connection with Winchcombe was when I was in Devon, in Dawlish, a man came into my studio one day, which was in the shop at that time.
Yeah.
And he was watching for ages. I told him complete pack of lies, basically, when he asked me where I was trained, etc. I invented something. And then eventually, he was there for a couple of hours, I think, and eventually everyone disappeared. I didn't want to tell the truth while people were around, because they were buying my pots.
Yes.
And I said to him, when everybody gone, you clearly know something about pottery. And he said, yes, my name's Sid Tustin. I was one of the founding potters of Winchcombe Pottery.
Oh, right.
And he used to come every year for about 3 or 4 years for a fortnight's holiday in Dawlish, and he would mentor me with the pottery, and while his wife sat on the beach and enjoyed a holiday.
Seems like a good idea. So that all worked well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was very lucky.
Now, as we mentioned at the start of our chat, you've now dipped your toe into the world of book writing. So tell us about that.
Well, in craft fairs, people got to know that I dance as well as... I'm a bit of a chatterbox, really, and they've got to know that I dance as well as making pottery. So I've become known as the Dancing Potter. So the book is called The Dancing Potter.
Uh-huh.
It's available on Amazon at $7.95.
Yeah. And good bookshops, as they say.
And when I do craft fairs, people often ask about the connection between pottery and the dance. So I thought it would be good to write a book to tell the whole story. It's got photographs of me as a young dancer and as an older dancer. It's also biographical, but with a lot more detail than what we've just discussed.
Mm.
And quite a few amusing anecdotal stories from my life.
About getting kicked out of here, there and everywhere.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So how long has the book been out?
28th of, where are we now? June. 28th of May.
Oh, so just about a month. Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, well, good luck with that, Peter. Thanks very much indeed for talking to us today. Good luck with the book.
Thank you.